White gloves in the vast Hitachi elevator, pressing the button for the lobby. Eerily smooth ascent, the speed of it pulling blood from her head, past floors unmarked and uncounted. Then the doors open silently and a large grove of live bamboo, growing from a rectangular pool the size of a squash court. Through registration, imprinting the blue ant card, signing, then up, with many more floors again, perhaps 50 in all. To this room, very large, with its large black furniture, where the bellman briefly shows her various amenities, then bows and is gone, no tip expected. She blinks, a James Bond set, Brosnan rather than Connery. She uses the remote as demonstrated, drapes drawing quietly aside to reveal a remarkably virtual-looking skyline, a floating jumble of electric Lego, studded with odd shapes you somehow wouldn't see elsewhere. As if you'd need special Tokyo add-ons to build this at home. Logos of corporations she doesn't even recognize, a strange luxury, and in itself almost worth the trip. She remembers this now from previous visits, and also the way certain labels are mysteriously recontextualized here. Whole seas of Burberry plaid have no effect on her, nor Mont Blanc, nor even Gucci. Maybe this time it will even have started to work for Prada. She thumbs the drapes closed and sets upon the unpacking and hanging up and putting away of CPUs. When she's finished, there is no sign that the room is occupied, save for her black East German envelope and the black iBook bag, both resting now on the ecru expanse of the enormous bed. She examines the instructions for the room's internet connection, gets out the iBook, and goes to Hotmail. Parkaboy with two attachments. She'd emailed him from Damien's, telling him she was on her way here, but not under whose auspices. Parkaboy is one of the few FFFers who she's certain would know exactly who Big End is and what Blue Ant is about. She'd asked him for his and Musashi's best advice on how to go about contacting Taki and obtaining the mystery number. This will almost certainly be that. It's titled Keiko. She opens it. How'd you manage Tokyo? But never mind, because the Sash and I have been burning the midnight oil for you in the meantime. Well, mostly the Sash, because he's the one who had to find us a Keiko. Except she's not a Keiko, but a Judy. Case opens the first attachment. Parkaboy, you are outrageous. A multi-layered confection, message within message, and all of it targeting Taki, or Taki as Parkaboy and Musashi imagine him. Keiko slash Judy is simultaneously pubescent and aggressively womanly, her shapely yet slender legs spilling out of a tiny tartan schoolgirl kilt to vanish mid-calf into shoved-down, bunched-up cotton knee socks of an unusually heavy knit. Case's cool module, wherever it resides, has always proven remarkably good at registering the salient parameters of sexual fetishes she's never encountered before and doesn't in the least respond to. She just knows now that these big socks are one of those, and probably culture-specific. There will be a magazine for Japanese guys into big socks, she's sure of it. The big socks go into retro faux Converse canvas, but with platform soles to balance the very sizable bulk of sock scrunch around the ankles, giving Keiko slash Judy a knees-down look recalling a baby Clydesdale.